Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business. And on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season two sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter signup.
There is so much talent that wants to work in climate right now. Like, it is unbelievable with the budget we've had, like the talent pool we've been able to recruit, and that's because of the mission. And honestly, when you come into our warehouse, you see the mission. You see the gel packs that would be landfill bound and the insulation that would have been thrown away. And so like that piece is great. And that makes it a really exciting time to start a climate company. I think on the flip side, it is hard to have a climate company that isn't just on its own a good business. And so we really had to make sure that if sustainability was not part of the pitch, that this was a good business decision regardless.
Each year, millions of tons of waste land in landfills, harming our planet and our ecosystems. Amidst these challenges of this crisis, there are companies lighting the way forward. And in today's episode, I am thrilled to introduce Lindsay Hole. She is the founder and CEO of Dispatch Goods, a pioneering reverse logistics company committed to addressing the global waste crisis head on. Lindsay's entrepreneurial path began with her involvement in the Surfrider Foundation's Ocean Friendly Restaurants program and culminated in the founding of Dispatch Goods, all while pursuing her MBA at UC Berkeley. Through Dispatch Goods, Lindsay is on a mission to revolutionize waste reduction by providing businesses with streamlined reuse solutions, ultimately diverting millions of items from the waste stream. I speak with Lindsay about the highs and lows of entrepreneurship, about building that flywheel effect, which reduces the cost to acquire a customer, which is incredibly important, especially when you're just starting out. We talk about B2B sales and the demand that the market is bringing. We talk about ensuring you bring to market a solution that doesn't have a green tax and why that's so important. We also talk about profitability and how profitability and sustainability align with each other. Get ready to be inspired, and I think this conversation is going to empower you to join the movement towards a brighter, cleaner future. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So just excited to kind of get into any correlation that you may had before jumping into basically solving our single plastic use problem and in terms of your career and starting Dispatch Goods.
So for my career, no, not necessarily. I actually worked in the cardiac operating room for over a decade. While I was doing that, I did start a surf bikini company, and it was a super fun endeavor. Although selling into surf shops, like you're selling $300 to $400 of goods. So, you know, I kind of told myself the next company I started, I wanted to have a larger TAM. But ultimately, my initial career took me to Hawaii, and I worked a lot with Surfrider Foundation, kind of on a volunteer basis, and launched a program where we helped businesses transition to more sustainable practices. And working with those businesses, I started to see like the problem with waste and the lack of solutions available for businesses. And so I really started to dream about like what a future kind of logistics infrastructure based on circularity could look like. And that was really the driving force behind the change.
And so to just maybe cement the problem, like we know that single waste plastics and companies using plastic to package, you know, food to other packaging. And I guess the other side of it is that we hear these like really crappy metrics about how well recycling actually happens. You know, you put your bin out there and maybe 10% of it makes its way into actually being reused. And I'm sure that's all getting worked on. That's going to get better as well. But like, what's the enormity of this problem that we are facing right now with plastic waste?
Yeah. And I would say that we focus on plastic waste, but really like all waste. We think about our current waste stream almost completely linear. Recycling aside, which is effective with a few types of materials, but generally not effective. Everything is moving in one direction and it's completely nonsensical because of the fact that a lot of the stuff that is ending up in our waste stream actually still retains value. And so like, that's the thing that was pretty interesting for us is understanding what consumers are throwing away kind of unnecessarily, and how if we enabled a more circular infrastructure, is there a way for consumers to send stuff back in a way that feels as easy as recycling, but is more effective at reusing products that still have value? And we kind of looked at two buckets of opportunities. One are high volume, kind of lower cost items. So packaging is generally in that category. And the other is high value, kind of lower frequency items, things like portable electronics and old kids gear and sporting goods, stuff that has value, but many consumers never get around to like listing on Facebook Marketplace. And that's kind of like the area that we wanted to double click on and really understand what would drive the consumer to start sending something to a place that is not the waste stream. And to answer kind of your question on the enormity, I mean, we estimate that there's over $1 trillion worth of goods in the US alone flowing in one direction to the waste stream, and the value is lost.
Wow. Yeah, you see it kind of everywhere. So what was the first thesis that you put together for Dispatch Goods in terms of like go-to-market strategy?
I will say that we kissed a lot of frogs before we found our current go-to-market. So when we talked to consumers, there was a few themes we heard. One, and this was really prevalent when we logged kind of like in the height of COVID, that was restaurant packaging. So we started by working with restaurants and transitioning them away from single use to something a bit more durable and using that as a way of getting consumers to now send back packaging. And we tested that. We also tested some kind of grocery, brick and mortar grocery store applications. Another commonly mentioned product were Amazon boxes. We didn't necessarily think that was the best place to start. But ultimately, in these consumer interviews, a maybe non-obvious product kept coming up. And that was items that are sent in cold chain deliveries. So meal and grocery, home health, and some fresh pet. People kept telling us about the fact they had a freezer full of gel packs and they didn't know what to do with them. And we were like, that's kind of interesting. So we started to kind of map out how many households were affected by cold chain packaging. And it's quite a few. We estimate between like a quarter and a third of all US households. And consumers are getting deliveries on a regular basis. So it was a pretty big pain point for the consumer. So we started with restaurants. Learned a lot, ultimately felt like that was probably not the best go-to-market for us, and tested a few others. But since 2023, have really doubled down on cold chain packaging as our go-to-market way of getting consumers to do something different with packaging.
Yeah. And so maybe just kind of walk us through an example of how like a customer would be using Dispatch Goods, as in your customer and then their customer, and like kind of that interaction. Because like, it's one thing you got to sell the company on like, let's change this, just use this. And then you also need engagement from the customer as well. So how has that been developed, and where, I guess, was that pain point between the customer and your customer and getting that flywheel to kind of work?
So one thing we learned with restaurants that we are pretty adamant about as we looked at kind of the world and where we wanted to double down is that we eventually got restaurants to transition completely to returnable packaging. At the beginning, it was like an opt-in that some consumers could select for. And what we found is that even if you get 10 to 20% of customers selecting, then it becomes operationally complex for any business to carry two different packaging types. So one thing that we got a lot of conviction around is when we work with a business, at least in a certain like geographical reach, this needs to be available for every consumer. And the easiest way to do that is to just have consumers have the option to send back packaging they're already getting. So we started collecting these gel packs, and Imperfect Foods, which is now Misfits Market, reached out and they're like, packaging is one of the top reasons cited for churn. These gel packs are also quite expensive. Can you help us set up a packaging returns program? And we were still, again, at that point, primarily working with restaurants. So it was a little bit like, we were starting to get a bit of conviction, but like, it was a little bit like out of process for us, but like, let's try it. And so then they sent a text to their customers in San Francisco. And the next week, 70% of customers were sending back packaging. And so we found that there was like no incentivizing the consumer needed. They already felt the pain of all this packaging coming to their house that they didn't want. They want the product. They don't want the packaging. And there's all, they have to, you know, often break down boxes or drain gel packs, or they run out of bin space. So like getting that much packaging is actually pretty inconvenient for a consumer. So we were solving a consumer pain point by just allowing consumers to put out the packaging during their next delivery and have it whisked away. And then on the brand side, we're selling them back the exact same packaging, but used at a lower cost. So it's a cost savings opportunity and a sustainability win. So we're cost savings plus kind of customer stickiness opportunity for brands. And we are solving just like an inherent pain point for consumers. And, you know, like our first thoughts were like, well, maybe Imperfect has mostly sustainability minded consumers, but now we're in all types of companies, like for fitness bros and like food is medicine and like a bunch of different segments, and have pretty universally found that over half of consumers will send back packaging when that's offered to them. And that's pretty incredible to get that high of a percentage of consumers to start doing something different. And it just shows that there was a very clear pain point for the households that were receiving all that packaging.
Yeah. And that Misfit Foods versus Food as Medicine example is, I think, pretty key here, because like you said, I in my mind right away, I was like, well, yeah, Misfit Foods, people are purchasing Misfit Foods probably because they're more climate or sustainability sensitive, but they're also probably get better deals as well. But the fact that you've been able to show that type of response from others is also just people want to do the right thing if it's there and it's easy for them to do that. And so I guess that's the question is like, does it work with these companies that do see customers fairly often? Or is it happening when people are maybe interacting with a brand a few times a year only?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess like one thing that I maybe should call out is some consumers feel like they're doing the right thing by sending back the packaging. But like the number one reason why consumers tell us in like consumer interviews that they're participating is because they don't have to break down the boxes. Like it's just a micro improvement over the current process that feels easier. And then, you know, for us, we like volume. So we're right now targeting companies that are delivering regularly to consumers. And that helps kind of build out that consumer muscle, where I think that if you imagine a consumer having to hold on to packaging for 3 months until they get their next delivery, that's going to be a bit more, I think, of an ask. What we are moving towards, though, is this returns aggregator, so that when a customer is already sending us cold chain packaging, we can list the other things that they can send us. And then we can target those less frequently ordered items. I mean, some of those are in the durable categories. So things like portable electronics, kids gear, and stuff that already have kind of re-commerce marketplaces. What we're doing is just making it really easy to get those things collected, because you're already sending us other items and we already have those logistics built out. And that's where we see the opportunity to collect items that are not ordered as frequently. But to get the flywheel going and the kind of the B2B2C, right now we target the high frequency ordered items because of the fact that there's a strong value prop to the brand and a strong value prop to the consumer straight out the gate.
An example where Misfit Foods, they're using a Dispatch Good cold pack. Who picks up that cold pack? Is it Misfit Foods the next time they deliver, or is it a Dispatch Good that picks up that and then processes it into your facility?
I guess one clarification is that it is not a Dispatch Goods cold pack. It's the cold packs that they were using before. We're just helping them get it back. And so they're getting that same Creative Ice pack back at a lower cost and then reusing that same Creative Ice pack. And we build out kind of like our favorite brands and vendors, and we can help support procurement. But yeah, that's why it's super easy for a brand to get started, is because they don't have to make a packaging switch to get started with us. And then as far as the logistics, Misfits, for the most part, has vertically integrated last mile. So it's their delivery driver picking up during the next delivery. But one really cool development in the past few years that was to some degree just like a happy accident and gave us a bit of tailwind is that there have been a shift away from the legacy FedEx UPS players within this segment of like high frequency ordered fresh deliveries into kind of like a new wave of players that are doing last mile delivery. And we have built out relationships with those last mile delivery drivers to do pickups during the next delivery. So it's just like an old milkman style swap. And that's like one nut that's cracked that really makes circular logistics a really strong financial case for businesses, is being able to piggyback a driver that's already at your house. Because obviously it lowers the cost of the returns logistics logistics pretty significantly.
Yeah. And so when you kind of got into this business, you kicked it off. How did you end up funding this? Was this through kind of venture? Was this family and friends? And like, how have you been able to kind of do that part of the business?
Yeah, I mean, it's through venture. You know, we were able to get quite a bit of momentum with relatively little cash in the early days. That being said, like, you know, we built out processing infrastructure and a lot of technology to support what we're doing, because basically knitting together all of the components is, you know, like that's the thing we had to solve for. It has to feel really easy for brands, which means that a lot of parties that aren't used to communicating need to communicate. And so that's one thing that we've had built out. And so I think that like we've gotten some really great investors in our past rounds. And I think that they are very aligned with the vision of the future being consumers one day are not going to put everything into the waste stream. And there are some consumers that are never going to go through the effort of listing stuff or donating stuff. And we're really helping to make it much easier for consumers to get stuff whisked away. And I think that there's alignment that that's a pretty big kind of like vision for what the future can look like.
When we think about your, like just your business model, obviously you have your marketing and your sales that you need to get into some of these larger kind of B2B type of customers. What do you think's been key? Has it been the business model that you've built? Has it been kind of the technology gluing those pieces together that's been kind of the key? Or has it been kind of your marketing and sales? Like what would you feel like this is kind of the secret sauce that we've been able to put together and this is kind of the key challenge that we've been able to solve that's allowed us to grow?
So I think that what has been maybe the most appealing is our unique go-to-market. There are other companies and some of them have raised a significant amount of capital that realize that there's a way of monetizing junk in consumers' homes. But most of them are direct to consumer, which means that they have a relatively high CAC. You know, it's going to be $50 to $100 to acquire a household. For us, because we're B2B2C, our CAC is like, if you look at the number of households that are sending us stuff, which we estimate is around 30,000, we are acquiring a household and getting households to start sending us stuff for between $5 and $10 a household. So if you translate basically the acquisition cost, which is direct sales into kind of mid-sized enterprises, into the household penetration. And so I think the fact that we do not have to go out and market directly to consumers, we have kind of a way of getting the brands to market to the consumers, that has been something that has really accelerated our business, because we can get a lot of volume quickly and a lot of market penetration quickly. And we're still saving the brands that we work with money. So I think that that's been the thing that has maybe differentiated us beyond those that have tried this in or are trying this in a different way.
Yeah, that's quite genius in terms of how to get a customer in this kind of scenario for you, right? It's quite a smart way for you to be able to reduce the cost to acquire a customer in this kind of scenario. I really understand the B2B side and you helping that, you know, Imperfect Foods reuse that ice pack. But what happens and what are the things that a consumer can send back to Dispatch Goods that you can then put back into kind of the circular economy? And how does that just work? Do you partner with people? Do you sell it? Like, how does that piece work?
So right now, for the last, call it 5 or 6 quarters, we've been focused on cold chain packaging, which is ice packs, insulation, some thermal tote bags, also some primary packaging. So some of the companies we work with have now switched to returnable meal containers as well, which is great. And so that's kind of created this flywheel in the returns process. One pilot we have already done, which is allowing consumers to send difficult to recycle items. For the initial pilot, had specialty recyclers that would take it. So that is a pilot that was completed. About a third of consumers paid to basically have that add-on service in the pilot, which was pretty interesting. And now we're testing the ability for consumers to send us stuff that has higher value, and we will essentially split that resale compensation with them. And what we're working on is creating offtake agreements with the re-commerce platforms. So there are already established re-commerce marketplaces. They are also having to pay to acquire consumers, and that costs them a bit. And so what we're trying to do is decrease basically the CAC on the seller side for these brands by marketing to consumers that are already sending us stuff and having really easy returns logistics and lower cost return logistics. We already have the ability to kind of like auto text consumers the night before. And then we have like a co-branded microsites with the brands. So we can tell the consumer everything else that they can return. And there's going to be essentially a return bag placed in the deliveries. So consumers can start sending us the list of items and then they will get a share of essentially what the resale value of those goods are. So that's that's how we're launching that.
That's quite powerful too, because I'm not going to mention names, but I do know some of those big recycling companies that kind of help pick up, you know, junk and say, oh, we're going to recycle it or pick up, you know, items. And, you know, a lot of that ends up going into the landfill. So this solution obviously helps with the circularity and these items are still good to reuse. Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. As an early company, though, and obviously one that's focusing on impact and sustainability and circularity, how do you as a company work on impact in terms of measurement? Do you have a measurement framework? Are you working on that? Like, how do you measure that core impact that you're providing?
Well, so far with the goods that we do essentially resell and cold chain, we've done LCAs on all of them. So we understand with our logistics, with our cleaning and processing, compared to manufacturing new, like how we net out. And the TLDR is that using something again is better than manufacturing new, probably like 9 times out of 10. We measure our carbon impact. We measure our waste impact. We also measure our water impact. And so there's pretty significant carbon savings from extending the lifetime of goods. So that's really at our core what we're here to do. And then I think what we hope happens over time is once there is a more sophisticated infrastructure for taking back returnable goods and sending them to like the curated partners that we and offtake channels that we have established, that brands will have the ability to pick more durable packaging and design items for circularity, knowing that a portion of those are going to re-enter the ecosystem, which I think is one of the ongoing challenges with reusable packaging in general. You know, you either have to have it be kind of clunky because you need to track it to the consumer and charge them if it's not returned, or you need to have a relatively high rate of return in order for both the economics and the carbon impact to make sense. So what we're solving for is just like the ease of return.
Yeah. And for the business sides that are signing up with Dispatch Goods, as you said, is that one, it's part of their impact, I'm sure, and trying to figure out to do that. But as you mentioned, there's a cost savings, of course, because they get to reuse the thing that they've already paid for.
Yeah, that's right.
To me, this seems like it's slightly in, you know, the chicken and egg scenario where scale probably helps you because you're able to then do more with the goods that you're able to pick up and partner with more people to do that. So how do you envision scaling this over the next kind of 3 to 5 years?
I think the thing that, you know, kind of like we're constantly evaluating is we think about adding more of our customers, so like more of our brand partners as a way of obviously increasing revenue, but increasing market penetration. And then we think about adding more returnable items to the consumer homes as a way of increasing margin and increasing the revenue per household. And so initially, kind of our thought is like, let's just go get every cold chain delivery company as a partner so that we are touching as many U.S. households as possible and then layer on the other items. That being said, like there's kind of a pull to doing this from what we hear from consumers. And so that's why we're kind of accelerating the testing of the consumer sending other items. So yes, there's definitely economies of scale that we get and some network effects that we get from layering in multiple types of partners and multiple types of products. But we do kind of like the simplicity of the Amazon model when they just did books for quite some time and just like touching as many households as we can on cold chain packaging. We do want to validate where we're going to go next and then start to map out when we would scale the ability to return other items. But yeah, I guess like kind of our strategy has been, let's just like absolutely dominate cold chain packaging returns and then have so many households returning stuff and start to build that consumer muscle so that we're really well positioned for when it's time to like layer on other product categories. So I guess that's how we think about it. But the flip side is if we focused on kind of like a more vertical strategy where consumers could start sending us more items in fewer markets, then our margins will be higher in those markets. So there is a chicken and egg problem. And I would say that it's a thing that we are constantly evaluating and testing on what we want to do. But the past year and a half has been pretty much heads down focused on cold chain returns.
Yeah, and I wanted to just get into the kind of push and pull of the market when it comes to the B2B side of it. And I've had lots of conversations with entrepreneurs that have been in sustainability or climate initiatives and businesses. And what they've said is that 10 years ago, you're really pushing this solution to the market. But now the market demand is kind of pulling them in and it's really open, opened up a lot of conversations. And you're selling direct to B2B as well. And so have you found that as well? Have you found that it's been difficult to have those conversations? Like how have you felt that part of the sales cycle and that demand?
So there's kind of three categories in cold chain: meal and grocery, fresh pet, and home health, like I mentioned before. And within meal and grocery, like a lot of these companies are gunning for profitability. And I think as long as we're accelerating a pathway to profitability by lowering costs and ideally helping businesses retain customers, we're pretty well positioned to be kind of like pulled by our customers. And they certainly pull us from market to market. So the whole reason we launched on the East Coast is we had like a handful of customers on the West Coast that wanted to scale. And so we had kind of guaranteed revenue when we launched on the East Coast, which really helped with our kind of pathway to profitability on the East Coast. And we've been profitable for three straight quarters on the East Coast. So yeah, I think there was a perception that this would be more expensive and really cumbersome. And now we have enough data to kind of prove otherwise, which is helpful. And so now that we have a lot of the big names in the space, that definitely makes the sales cycles easier for new customers that we bring in. Also, just like our product's gotten better. Like our early customers got, you know, the 1.0 version of this where we were figuring a lot of it out. And now we've been able to solve a lot of kind of the hangups. And that's like more on the software side of how everything gets knit together so that it's a lot more operationally easy. And there's still work for us to do in terms of inventory visibility. And like there's a lot of stuff where we want this to really feel and truly feel as easy as single use. And I think we're getting closer and closer every day to that. But there's, you know, single use is very, very easy. Using things once and then making it no longer anyone's problem feels very easy. And so what we realize is if there is a slight operational lift, it's usually worth it. But we would like for it to eventually feel like there is no operational lift, and we're constantly working towards that. And I think at that point, then it's like really hard to justify a no.
And dispatch goods is obviously a really impactful business, but there's a lot of layers and parts to it. And so I just want to ask a question around building a climate or sustainability type of impactful business, but then also having the like sustainability of the business as well, because there's that flywheel of obviously sustainability of the business can then lead into more impact.
Right. One of our investors and someone I call on quite a bit said to me, in order to build a big, profitable, and I would add impactful company, you have to be big first. And so when we looked at where to start, there were plenty of items that were kind of close to our hearts. Like as a surfer, I see things in the lineup and you see microplastics in the sand. And ultimately, some of those we had a table until we had kind of some economies of scale. And we first went after where there was margin and where there was a strong business case and a strong consumer pool and said, okay, let's use these things to build the infrastructure. And then you can really layer on from there. But it did require some discipline because there is most of the team, especially the early team, is very mission driven. And so you want to go after everything and all of the waste that you hate. But practicing that discipline is, I think, really critical in order to be big enough to have kind of the impact that we want to have kind of societally.
And you're building a business, but you're also building a business that has impact. So what would you say for those people that are kind of thinking about jumping into that? Obviously, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. But like, what would be the advice on getting into this type of this impact space?
Well, I can share the positive first, which is there is so much talent that wants to work in climate right now. Like it is unbelievable with the budget we've had, like the talent pool we've been able to recruit. And that's because of the mission. And honestly, when you come into our warehouse, you see the mission. You see the gel packs that would be landfill bound and the insulation that would have been thrown away. And so like that piece is great. And that makes it a really exciting time to start a climate company. I think on the flip side, it is hard to have a climate company that isn't just on its own a good business. And so there was a realization for us that some of the stuff that we wanted to tackle, maybe thin film plastic and some of the other stuff that like personally was like pretty important to us, like the economics we couldn't get to pencil. And so that's something that we'll constantly revisit as like our economics get better, as we become more automated. There's always like a future opportunity to tackle some of that stuff. But we really had to make sure that if sustainability was not part of the pitch, that this was a good business decision regardless. And that really meant listening to the consumers on what they wanted to do and listening to the businesses on what they would need for this to be something that was interesting for them. So yeah, I guess there's pros and cons of starting a climate company, because pros are you can recruit really, really amazing talent. And the con being, like, you feel that kind of tug with where the strongest business case is and where the strongest impact. I think that luckily, like, the underlying kind of mission of Dispatch is to use items more times. And like, that is generally better for business and generally better for the climate. So that kind of helps us have this North Star, both having, you know, financial impact and a climate impact.
Yeah, I love that statement that you said. And I think you need sustainability both in your business, but obviously in what you're doing as well. And, you know, sustainability and profitability allow you then to potentially grow and scale that might be able to go back and say, you know, those pain in the butt type of single plastics that we see in, you know, strawberries packaging, like, now maybe we can tackle that, but it wasn't a sustainable business avenue in the beginning. It's kind of really an interesting take. So, you know, this is awesome. Love to hear your story, how you built it. And I think for listeners, it's kind of one of those things where there's a lot of moving parts that seem like, I was really daunted before having this conversation with, like, how do you do this all? How do you do the logistics and pickups and all of these things and challenge that? And I think we need entrepreneurs like yourself that are doing these hard things and can figure out business models that work, because like you said, it's so easy to just throw away and use something once. And that's kind of how we've built everything. So how can listeners find out more about Dispatch Goods and learn about what you're doing in your business?
Yes, our site, dispatchgoods.com. Feel free to message me or the team through there. Also, LinkedIn is a great way. I'm the only Lindsay Hole, I think. So I'm easy to find. It's H-O-E-L-L. So you can ping me directly if there's something you want to talk about. I try to take as many potential founder calls as I can.
Lindsay, thanks so much again for joining us.
Yeah, likewise. Really great to talk to you.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review.